From a basement in Ealing, a team of ineffectual superheroes casts a watchful eye over the world of nerd. Whenever there's a movie trailer to be dissected, whenever there's a Joss Whedon project to be discussed, whenever there's a squeeze to be squeezed, there will be... The Dork Avengers!
Hello there. You're listening to Issue 2 of The Dork Avengers. It's the podcast that some people are already calling Yet Another Geeky Podcast. I'm Pete, Sonic the Hedgehog, Dylan Trenchard, and with me as ever is Duncan Amy Rose Heaney.
Now, see, I'm beginning to dislike this giving me stupid nicknames.
I think What's stupid about Amy Rose? Are you saying just because she's a girl?
I'm saying she's one of Sonic's many unwelcome friends.
And you're one of my many unwelcome friends. Welcome to the podcast. So, Don, what have we got coming up on today's show?
Well, we'll be taking a look at Tintin, The Secret of the Unicorn. We'll be taking another look into the darkest recesses of forums.
Have we got anything to match last week's perversion?
I hope not. I really, truly hope not, but I'm almost certain we have.
Iron Man has sex with a fridge.
No, it just gave him the cold shoulder.
Oh, that's bad.
Trust me, that's the best line of this whole podcast.
What else do we have?
Well, after I introduced you to Halo last week, this week it was your turn to introduce me to something.
We're going to be talking about your experiences watching Community later on. Maybe we'll finally have a positive section of the podcast, although I doubt it.
We're geeks. Negativity is our lifeblood.
No, I think McDonald's is our lifeblood.
Shall we start?
Let's go.
Dork Avengers, assemble!
Okay, I'm coming.
So, Don, what have you been up to since the last podcast?
Well, we went to a Zelda concert.
Yes, the Legend of Zelda 25th anniversary concert at the Hammersmith Apollo.
Yeah, there's been three concerts, I believe, in Tokyo, LA, and the final one was in London.
So this was the concert held to celebrate 25 years of Zelda.
Yes, and also to promote the upcoming Zelda Skyward Sword.
Basically a collection of music from the Legend of Zelda series, played by... It wasn't the London Philharmonic, was it? It was the Royal Philharmonic Concert Orchestra.
You know, it was kind of a celebration of, well, 25 years of Zelda music.
It was a celebration of almost all of the Legend of Zelda games.
Ocarina of Time featured heavily. Wind Waker got an amazing suite in the first half.
Which is more than the game deserved.
Let's not start this again.
A sailing simulator got...
Shh! Shh!
At least the music was good while you were sailing for 2 hours.
Well, except at night when it turned off.
Except for night, yeah. So at night you were just sailing in the blackness.
Yes, but the Wind Waker medley, where they went through pretty much every main track from Wind Waker, was phenomenal.
It was really nice to kind of hear some of these themes that you've heard beeped out of your computer done with a full orchestra. I mean, you know, I was moved towards the end when they played the main Legend of Zelda theme. Yeah. You know, it was rousing, it meant something. You know, I realised that I've wasted so many hours of my life playing these games.
Yeah, I mean, what was it you said? You said composer Koji Kondo basically wrote the soundtrack to your childhood.
He did, because Koji Kondo was responsible for most of Nintendo's hits, wasn't he?
I mean, he was in charge of the Zelda series. I mean, I think he still plays
all the Super Mario games as well.
Yeah, up to Galaxy.
Up to Galaxy, yeah.
Yeah, and I think he still played a role in Galaxy too.
But enough about Mario, back to Zelda.
But no, it was. I mean, the orchestra was outstanding. Everything was played impeccably. The audience was respectful. I mean, because from what I understand in LA, the audience was rowdy and cheered.
That's what I'd read. I'd read the audience basically ruined the performance.
Yeah, because what they did, they played video along with the track. So they'd be playing, say, a suite from Zelda Twilight Princess.
Yeah.
Apparently in America, every time kind of they move to the next stage in the video, there was whooping and woo! Yeah! Woo!
It was like being in a sitcom audience, from what I understand.
Except every 5 minutes, the two will they, won't they leads kissed. It was that level of whooping and cheering. And
this performance had its own will they, won't they lead, didn't it? It was presented by Robin Williams' daughter Zelda.
Ah, yes. Zelda Williams.
Zelda Williams.
Okay, get that sinister, lusty look out of your eyes. It's creepy.
But it's Zelda Williams, who I'd never even seen or heard of until this performance, but now I love her.
And she was charming. She obviously really loved Zelda. She had the audience on her side right from the start. Pete had to sit cross-legged every time she came on stage.
Also because I really needed a Wii. So yeah, it was a very good concert.
Outstanding. I really hope there's more kind of, I really hope there's similar video game concerts in the future, because...
Well, it's funny you should say that, because the Royal Philharmonic Concert Orchestra's next gig is actually on November 5th, the day this podcast should come out, and they're playing music from the Final Fantasy series.
I am very upset that I can't go to that one.
So do you think that's what the Royal Philharmonic Concert Orchestra does now? I'm worried that once they've plumbed the truly orchestral soundtracks, they're going to start really reaching. I mean... score from Manic Miner, anyone?
But then, see, this is because your worldview of video games is stuck in, like, 1980 to 1995.
That's very true. Paperboy.
But I hope there are more video game concerts. The Zelda concert has proven there is an audience for video game music.
Yeah.
Even if that audience does smell kind of funky.
There was an odour.
Yes.
I think more of them should have bought the Link 72-hour body spray. Because it had clearly been a while since their last shower. I mean, it's only a small thing, but I think not washing is fine if you're just sitting in your bedroom all day, as I suspect most of them usually are. And yourself included, Dunk.
No question.
But if you're going out to a concert with other people, put some deodorant on, please. Even if you can't quite bring yourself to have a wash, put some deodorant on.
But all in all, the Zelda concert was... stunning, outstanding.
It was a profound evening.
I have not had a better night out this year.
And Zelda Williams, if you're listening to this, call me.
Zelda Williams, if you're listening to this, please look into security. So, other than Zelda, have you been doing anything else interesting since the last podcast?
I have. I've been reading a revolutionary book.
Revolutionary book? The Bible? Have you found God?
I've not found God. I've looked down the back of the sofa. He's not there.
Actually, revolutionary and the Bible probably isn't two words that should go together.
Let's not alienate our demographic, Dunk.
Yes.
Go
God.
Indeed. No, I've been reading Neil Strauss's The Game.
Okay, I vaguely heard of this. I'm not...
It's the one in which he infiltrates a pickup society of men who basically use any kind of manipulation they can... to pick up women.
Right, you're talking kind of psychological manipulation as opposed to something like Rohypnol or...
I don't know, I'm only two chapters in. I'm not sure that Rohypnol won't end up being involved. It's a truly awful book so far, but I can't stop reading it.
Truly awful as in badly written, or truly awful as in just so unpleasant to read?
Oh no, it's very well written.
Yeah.
But it's very unpleasant to read. I mean, you've already got them saying things like, such as you've got to give girls backhanded compliments in order to pick them up.
Well, imagine I'm a girl. Pick me up. Oh, hello there.
Your tits are nice, but I'm not sure about your bum. I think that's the kind of backhanded compliment they're talking about.
My tits are nice, thank you.
I know. The main guy is a guy called Mystery.
He's called Mystery.
He's called himself Mystery. I don't think it was his birth name.
Is that a surname, a first name, or is it like Prince?
I think it's like, you know how you had in the Mario Brothers movie? It was Mario, Mario and Luigi Mario.
Right.
I think his name's Mystery Mystery or Mystery Mario.
Right.
So Mystery Mario basically runs these sort of courses where people pay him $500 and he teaches them to pick up women in the sleaziest way possible. And I've got to the point in the book where he suggests to the author of the book that he should go and use the chat up line, "If I weren't gay, I'd totally be hitting on you right now." Or something like that.
Right.
And I'm baffled by the logic of this. I'm assuming that it's going to work.
That seems like something that wouldn't work.
Yeah, very categorically.
I think the theory being, I suppose, that women are not threatened by gay guys.
Yeah. But what about Christopher Biggins? But no, I just can't see how that's going to work. The logic that Mystery Mario employs is that a girl just... won't mind that you've lied to her.
But if you say you're gay and you turn out not to be gay...
I think most girls probably would object to that in some form.
Also, in my experience, most girls don't want to talk to me even if I was gay.
You mean you're not? End of podcast. So what about you? Have you done anything of interest since the last podcast?
No, my internet's been down all week and... What you don't realise when your internet goes down is just how over-reliant I am on it. So when it went down, suddenly I found myself unable to do even the simplest things.
Were you able to do the simplest things before? Can you boil an egg?
You put egg in thing until it's boiled.
There we go. The How to Cook Geek podcast.
Actually, I was in a hotel once in Wales, and some guys were in the next room, and they came home drunk. they had no food. They'd been drinking. They were hungry. So they went down to the beach and they caught a crab using crabbing lines. So just like an ordinary kind of crab the size of my hand. And they and
I'm thinking Sebastian from The Little Mermaid.
Smaller and less cute.
I wouldn't say Sebastian was so much cute as sassy, but carry on.
Yes. So they brought this crab back to their hotel room and decided cooking it in the kettle was the sensible thing to do.
Of course.
Apparently what happens if you cook a crab in a kettle is it explodes.
No.
Apparently so. Shell everywhere.
Try it yourself.
The next morning, they were down at breakfast and they were all having to sit there. They were all being sit down on the table where they were yelled at by the owner. And then the one person who hadn't gone out and caught the crab and had just gone to bed was allowed breakfast. The other ones were forced by the landlady to sit there and watch him have breakfast and weren't allowed any themselves. So the moral of the story is, don't cook a crab in a kettle.
Hello. I'm actor, writer and comedian Peter Dylan Trenchard from the Dork Avengers podcast, and also from the background of the IT crowd that one time. As a geek, I don't get much communication with the outside world, so when people send me email messages, it means a lot. If you'd like to get in touch with the Dork Avengers podcast, then please, please email us at dorkavengerspodcast@gmail.com, especially if you're an attractive lady. Or even an unattractive one, really. I don't think I can afford to be picky anymore. So as we've already mentioned, our film review this episode is dedicated to The Adventures of Tintin, Secret of the Unicorn. Written by Stephen Moffat, Joe Cornish and Edgar Wright, directed by Steven Spielberg and produced by Peter Jackson. This film features the boy reporter Tintin, who very rarely does any reporting, as he goes on the trail of a lost treasure and meets a cast of wacky characters along the way. It's obviously based on the Hergé books. Duncan, what did you think?
Well, it was based on the Hergé books, but not very closely. What got me about the Hergé books versus this film is they have a sense of fun. They have a sense of life, and this film doesn't really. I mean, the elements are there, you know? They have wacky adventures, there's comedy that isn't very funny, there's, you know, adventure, they go to exotic locations, and yet somehow it doesn't come together in any kind of meaningful way.
Because, of course, you're quite a big fan of the Tintin books,
well,
aren't you?
I'm quite a big fan. I wouldn't say I'm, you know, super fan. I couldn't tell you what happens in each of the books from memory, but I have read them all and I do own them all and I have got the cartoon series on DVD.
I'd say that's quite super fan-ish. Whereas I've never actually seen the Tintin cartoon or read the Tintin books.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've got to admit, I still found it disappointing. I mean, it felt like it had the action of an Indiana Jones movie, but with none of the spirit, none of the joy.
Well, I think the problem is, I mean, take the action scenes, for example. There were some action scenes in this that were very similar in kind of scale and tone to an Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah.
What this doesn't have is Harrison Ford being able to turn to the audience with a twinkle in his eye.
Well, that's it, isn't it? I mean, the animation in this film, there's no life behind the eyes of the characters. And it's baffling because they used motion capture for these, I believe. So they actually had real, genuine actors going through every scene in the film, sort of with their movements, and yet they had to make it into a cartoon. Why couldn't they just use the performances?
Well, exactly. This is the biggest problem I had with this film, is that there was nothing in this film that couldn't have been done live action, and wouldn't have been better live action.
Tintin is quite a bland character at the best of times,
yep.
From what I can tell. And I kind of feel this was good casting because my opinion of Jamie Bell, the actor, is about the same as my opinion of Tintin, the character. And that is, eh.
The accepted theory among Tintin fans, I believe, is that, you know, he... Okay, do you want me to rephrase that?
Please carry on, Professor Duncan.
What I read on Wikipedia before watching this film said that Tintin is bland as he kind of acts as the eyes of the audience and... You know, they can relate to him because he doesn't have any discernible personality, so they can kind of project their own persona onto him. He is a bland character, but he's made up for, certainly in the later Tintin books, by the fact he's surrounded by much kind of better drawn,
hot women.
Actually, there are very, very few women in the Tintin books.
And of course, the male characters that were in it weren't particularly good.
Well, I mean, I like the dynamic between Tintin and Haddock in the books. Haddock is basically J. Jonah Jameson from Spider-Man after his first appearance. He's blustering and he's angry and, you know, he gets angry at the world and he rants a lot of the world, but he's got a heart of gold and he'll always be there to back up Tintin when he needs it despite his clumsiness.
Whereas in this, he's just a washed-up alcoholic.
But that is how he is in his first appearance as well. When Haddock is first in it, he's a washed-up old drunk, super alcoholic. He's a bit like my dad. Somehow translating that Haddock to this film, he's just not very likeable. Because it's really, more than Tintin's story, it's Haddock's story of kind of overcoming his alcoholism and, you know, regaining his self-respect.
Yeah, I felt this was very much Haddock's movie.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so he's a washed-up old alcoholic, but they drive that point home so hard to the point where it becomes tiresome, including one really, really embarrassing scene in a plane where he drinks a bottle of methylated spirits and then somehow gets the plane moving by belching into the exhaust.
Fumes, yeah.
Yeah. She didn't make any sense to me. Came across as contrived.
I'd like to see the Mythbusters see if that actually exists.
Haddock's not likable. Tintin's bland. The Thompson twins, who are the quote-unquote comedy detectives.
The Thompson twins played, of course, by Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. I think the only time that those two are going to be cast as twins.
Yes, and the... Indeed. And the own... And they might as well have been Christopher Biggins and Tony Blair, because they did not sound anything like...
That's a comedy double act I'd like to hear.
I mean, it could have been anyone. It could have been... I mean, Nick Frost and Simon Pegg doing posh voices that were barely distinguishable as Frost and Pegg.
I feel like I've reached a point in my life where I just can't tolerate implausible stupidity anymore.
Their characters were true to Thompson and Thompson in the books. Thompson and Thompson work well in small doses. And the mistake this film made was that whenever Thompson and Thompson were in it, it wasn't in small doses. It was lengthy,
every
5 minute scenes of slapstick and stupidity, which just were just irritating. But it wasn't all bad. I mean, I know we're being very negative here, but
it was a competent action film.
The action scenes were well done. You know, they were some of them were exciting.
There were some fantastic set pieces. I mean, the big showdown in the Moroccan city was fantastic. You know, you had high speed chases and dams bursting and also, you know, it was really well done.
I should also point out that nothing in that scene hadn't already been done in a similar way in GoldenEye.
Of course, the film was also in 3D, wasn't it? My main problem with the 3D in this film was that it made everything so much darker.
Well, exactly, there's a scene set in the desert and it looked like it was set at night. You take off the 3D glasses and suddenly you realise, oh wait, that's not a moon, it's the sun. Also, it makes things blurry. It makes it hard to track.
Yeah, because as I said, the action scenes were very fast-paced. And it's like, oh, I think that's Snowy the dog.
Who was kind of awesome in this film, I thought. I think he was probably the most heroic character. I think certainly the kids in the audience seem to appreciate Snowy.
I didn't feel the kids in the audience appreciated very much of the film at all. I felt there were so many moments where you were meant to be laughing or feeling something, and there was just deathly quiet in the audience.
Except for the bits where the kids started going, has it started yet?
Of course, I do get annoyed with children in films. I mean, years ago, we went to see Looney Tunes back in action.
I should point out that we were still reasonably adult at this point.
We were... We were 17 or 18.
Oh, okay.
Looney Tunes Back in Action obviously features Timothy Dalton.
Yes.
Former James Bond actor Timothy Dalton as the villain of the piece. And at one point, this little muppet of a child suddenly shouts out, is that Pierce Brosnan? No! It's a completely different Bond actor. Okay. They look completely different.
Let it go, Pete.
He's older than Pierce Brosnan.
Pete, let it go.
If you're that little git listening, and you were the kid in the cinema 10 years ago in Banbury who said, is that Pierce Brosnan? Stop listening to the podcast. Go outside, kill yourself.
Okay, are you done?
I'm done.
Okay.
You don't deserve to live.
Right. Sit in the corner so you've calmed down.
Okay.
So, all in all then, Pete, Tintin, would you recommend seeing it?
No. I'd recommend maybe renting the DVD. Because the action was done really well. It was a decent enough plot, if not the execution of the plot. I'd probably give it 3 stars.
Out of 5.
Out of 5.
I would say, if you've got kids, there's probably not much else on at the cinema at the moment to see. It's not a bad film. I mean, if it wasn't for the 3D making it uncomfortable for me to view it, it would have been diverting. I've seen a lot worse, 3 out of 5. When your cinema costs more than a DVD, I would say, rather than this film, go and buy a DVD of the Tintin cartoons.
More movie reviews next time.
You're listening to the Dork Avengers, wasting their lives since 1983.
Now it's time for Forum Watch, the part of the show where we look at the darkest recesses of the internet and just poke them with a stick. Dunk, what have you found for us this week?
Well, seeing as last week I felt like we kind of delved into the sewers of the internet, I thought this week might as well look at Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It's as bad a segue as any.
So I found a number of interesting discussion topics.
Where was this?
This was at Technodrome Forums.
The Technodrome Forums, wow.
Yeah, I assume it's what Krang runs in his spare time.
Krang being the little pink brain creature from the original Turtles cartoon.
Yes, which leads us to our first topic, which is, have you ever wished you could mutate your pets? I used to wonder what it would be like if my cat were to suddenly turn humanoid, like in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Have you ever imagined your childhood pet or current pet mutating?
See, you remember my dog, Peggy. Oh,
yes, I remember your dog Peggy used to rub herself on my leg and leave little skin flicks across it.
So I kind of feel that I might have quite liked my dog Peggy to have been mutated into a humanoid form.
Why?
Well, I mean, she seemed very horny.
Yeah, she did. But then she left, as I said, she left skin flakes. I mean,
nobody's perfect.
After being around your dog, it looked like I'd stepped in a flapjack.
Yeah, because she wouldn't be a, like, live, beautiful... She was quite old by that point, so...
And smelly, so she'd be the kind of person that goes to a Zelda concert.
Nice.
You've had other pets. You had a cat as well, didn't you?
I've had several cats. The first cat I had, I watched vomit itself to death.
Really?
Yep.
Did it see you undressing? So most of the people that answer this seem normal and reasonably well-adjusted. Yep. Well, I say well-adjusted. The first person's response is, hell no. I'd like to have a pet Pokemon. But I'd never mutate my dog.
Which Pokemon would they like to have as a pet?
I know, but I would like to have Jigglypuff.
It would sing you to sleep.
Exactly.
A lot, and then draw on your face with marker pen.
Jigglypuff is basically a frat student.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I'd quite like to have Jinx.
What does Jinx do?
I don't know, but she's got big breasts and big lips and kisses you, and then you die.
Now, I think you're mixing up Jinx and Pamela Anderson.
It's a common mistake.
Yes.
So going back to the Turtles thread.
I think that's probably wise at this point. So Gobo, nope, but I've often wanted to mutate other people.
That's just creepy.
Yeah, but isn't the whole concept of mutation in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles mutating animals to basically be humanoid?
Yeah.
So how would you mutate a human to be even more humanoid?
Pamela Anderson.
I spot. When I was a kid, I wanted to see what it would like if my dog mutated. Now, I don't even want to think about doing that. He's grown up.
He hasn't grown up. He's on a Turtles fan forum.
Stingray69 adds value to the forum. No, but I've wanted to mutate myself into a Ninja Turtle. I also wanted to be Superman and the Green Ranger. So there's telling you something.
It's telling you that Stingray69 is a greedy...
Yeah, no man should have that much power. And Katie.
Katie rounds off the thread.
Yeah, and she is the anti-girl, apparently.
Okay, what does that mean? Does that just mean a boy?
I assume so. My dog would be the mouthiest, most rebellious thing ever. And my cat would be an annoying, bratty kid. The best animals I have are my fish. Or my dragon.
What?
But they'd be boring.
Hang on, no, wait, what?
Okay, right. Okay, so, A, she sounds normal up to the point where she admits he has a dragon.
Yeah, you don't lead with the dog and the cat when you've got a dragon.
Also... She thinks, dog, cat, fish and dragon, the dragon would be boring.
So the Turtles fans have decided that the answer to ever wish you could mutate your pet is maybe?
I don't know what the answer is.
But I think it's one of those complicated ethical questions that the Turtles fans just aren't going to come up with an answer to in a day.
Yeah, plus it's a lot cheaper to buy cat food than human food.
Amazing. Astonishing. Not bad.
So it's not just deep ethical questions about pet genetic manipulation.
Sure, sure.
There's also the difficult discussion of gender and sexuality.
It seems to be quite a recurring thread from what I saw on the Turtles forum.
Well, yeah, I mean, for example, this one. from Ninja Turtles, 1987 to 1996. So I presume that's the original
cartoon.
Teenage yeah. Mutant Hero Turtles. Is Krang male or female?
Krang was definitely male.
Well, Krang's big robot thing was male.
Yeah, so Krang was male.
Okay.
End of discussion.
Well, no. No?
Is it not the end of the discussion?
Oh,
Doug?
You wish it was the end of the discussion. Actually, says Herald 7, it would be funny if all this time Krang was a female.
No, it wouldn't.
I couldn't look at this. I couldn't look at the show the same way again. Lol.
Okay, and then Cybercube chips in.
They refer to Krang as he and him in many eps.
So that is the end of the discussion. They found out.
But no, Redeemer, who's a mad scientist apparently, I am pretty sure Krang is unisex.
Based on what? I think he is correct in the sense that Krang would be able to use any toilet he wanted to.
Cybercubed has had enough of this banal discussion. He gets quite angry. Why is this seriously being asked? Many episodes has Shredder or the Turtles referred to Krang as he and him. Do you even watch the show?
See, I love Cybercubed. I particularly love his work on Points of View and the Daily Mail website. He's got some valuable contributions to make. I share Cybercube's frustration because this was answered in the third post of the thread.
And the discussion goes on. Ultimately, the question of whether Krang is female or male is pretty conclusively answered. He's male. And the question of what is the point of this particular thread is never fully addressed.
As you said, you know, sexual orientation seems to be something that kind of concerns the people of the Turtle Forum rather too much, I feel, because there's a whole 6-page thread about it, the sexual orientation of the TMNT.
Yes, I can't say this person's name. What is that? Coprophagus Beauty.
Coprophagus Beauty.
Gosh, he's Mauser, apparently. I wonder to whom feel the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles sexually attracted.
Rearrange the words and make a sentence.
I think what he's saying is, I wonder to whom the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are sexually attracted. Would they prefer turtles because originally they were turtles too? Or are they so humanised that they prefer humans?
Well, that always seemed fairly clear to me. They always seemed to have a pretty big crush on April O'Neil.
Well, who didn't?
Me.
Really? Big yellow raincoats. I mean,
that's where it's at. Yeah.
Who knows what treasures lie beneath?
Well, it's still just April O'Neil.
So, yes, do they prefer turtles or humans? They grown up in a civilised environment surrounded by humans that reminds me of sheepdogs who are born in a sheep barn. These dogs think they are sheeps and also fall in love with sheep.
The plural of sheep is sheep! Why do people not know this?
If he'd known it, he would be looking a bit sheepish right now, wouldn't he? Oh, God, you're going to hit me, aren't you?
No, I'm just going to edit in a tumbleweed.
He or she goes into a deep analysis of each of the turtles. So we're leaving out Venus de Milo, who I think was the female turtle.
Venus de Milo does not exist. Right. Officially.
Okay, they did a live-action show when Venus de Milo was...
They did. It crossed over with Power Rangers in Space.
Okay, that says it. That says it all. Do two negatives make a positive in that case?
No. No, they really don't.
For me, Leonardo was always like an ascetic monk. He follows the way of Bushido. He is a true warrior and the leader. He has no interest in a physical relationship. Michelangelo is more like Don Juan. He might have a short relationship with her, but nothing serious. Mike is the only one I can imagine to be gay.
Whoa, what? Where does that come from?
I have no idea. I mean, maybe it's because he's the party dude, you know?
I don't understand why Michelangelo is the only one who could be gay.
Oh, you were talking about the bit about him being gay. I thought you were talking about him being kind of a bit of a Lothario.
Oh, no, that makes sense.
Donatello is probably shy and reserved in such matters, but in a relationship, he would certainly be very loving and loyal. Maybe he's like the classical loser. It's a long, hard way, but at the end, he gets the girl.
Wrong. This was stated very clearly in the opening lines of the 1987 TV series, Donatello does machines. Donatello has no interest in girls, no interest in boys, no interest in rats. He does machines. Move on.
Raphael is a very difficult character. He needs a girl with a very strong character. Her physical appearance doesn't matter. All that matters for him is true love. He is the only one I can imagine a relationship between turtle and human. Okay, but what do you think about a relationship between turtle and human? Is this zoophilia?
Yes. Yes, it definitely is.
So, interesting points raised there, I think. So, Bauer536, says, "This is how I see it. Leo is the guy who gets girls that turn out to cheat on him, betray him, or get killed by the enemy. Don is the guy who gets girls but has problems communicating to them. Girls may give up on him, making boys try to hit on him." What? Because girls give up on him, boys automatically move in.
Internet forum poster in unable to understand human relationships. Shocker.
Raph may find a girl from another planet. Yes, maybe an alien. I won't say he'll move up with her in space, but maybe they'll marry and still live in good old New York City.
So, I mean, there's 6 pages of this.
Yeah, far too many pages. So, the conversation continues, but Spitfire's had enough of this. Why is it that this has to come up every few months? The Turtles aren't gay, and they're never going to bone humans outside of horrifically written fan fiction. You're into that, there's tons of licensed Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles yaoi. All over eBay. What is yaoi?
I believe it's fan fiction.
Master Splinter pretty much wraps it up. This thread is completely obscene, inappropriate, and I am actually shocked that a mod has let it get this far.
And that comment's on page 4 of 6.
I think what we've learned about Turtle fans is that when people start thinking about some of the seedier elements of the franchise a little bit too much, it takes you to a place that no mind should ever go.
I think sometimes it sounds like we're being a bit harsh on internet fans. And don't get me wrong, we love a lot of internet fans. You know, we are geeks ourselves. I frequent many message boards. But some people just take it that little bit too far.
Yes, and in fairness to Technodrome, the vast majority of threads are just Turtles fans geeking out and having fun. And that's what message boards should be all about.
Yeah.
Not discussing the sexuality of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in sticky, sticky detail.
This is the Dork Avengers Podcast. If you're listening to this outside, you're no friend of theirs.
One of the things we do on this show is introduce one another to new experiences that the other might not have come across before, that usually that we think they'll enjoy, but sometimes that we think we'll just piss them off. And this week, I subjected you to 2 episodes of Community, the American sitcom.
Yeah, Community's one of those shows I was aware of, but I've always kind of avoided, because I think the way it was described to me made me think it was basically an adult Saved by the Bell.
It's that and so much more. Chevy Chase basically is Screech. And of course, for those people who don't know what Community is, it's an American sitcom set on a university campus. It's about a collection of oddballs who form their own sort of study group, and it's their hilarious antics with a lot of pop culture references thrown in. What did you make of it?
Pilot episode was good, actually. The main focus of the pilot, and indeed the rest of the series, I believe, is Jeff Winger.
Yes, played by Joel McHale.
Who I recognised as the greedy bank clerk from Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, I can't help but feel that we should talk about this, because the greedy bank clerk in Spider-Man 2 has literally maybe a minute of screen time.
He refuses Aunt May a bank account and a toaster, and then tries to steal some money and gets his wrist slapped.
And that's literally it. And you recognised him.
Of course I did.
The minute he came on screen, you were like, oh, that's the bank guy from Spider-Man 2.
Well, I think that's either the strength of the quality of the actor, or the fact that I may be too big of a Spider-Man fan.
How many times have you seen Spider-Man 2?
I've seen Spider-Man 2 probably about 10 times.
Just this month?
This, yeah. So moving back to Community.
Back to Community, yes. Starring Spider-Man 2's Joel McHale in the lead.
He's a lawyer. I mean, really, I think his role is to kind of anchor the group.
Yeah, he's arguably the most normal one in the group. Although, even though he's a complete anti-hero, and he's a pathological liar.
Yeah. Then the rest of the group, the ones that stood out to me in the pilot are Pierce, who is played by Chevy Chase.
Ah, Chevy Chase.
Now, it is still a shock to see how much older he looks now than in things like National Lampoon's European Vacation and
The Three Amigos.
Oh, yeah.
Now needing a Zimmer frame.
You see, they could do the thrust they do in that, except they're all just cracking after hip replacements. No. Yeah, he's odd. He's kind of playing an old man who is just completely out of touch with everything.
He's a very bitter, twisted character. I mean, in the second season especially, he really alienates the group with his behaviour.
He has a great line in the pilot where he's basically sexually harassing one of the other group. And someone says something along the lines of, you know, why are you sexually harassing her? It's like,
he says, how can it be sexual harassment if I like her? that sums up Pierce, yeah. Really. You know, he's very oblivious to other people's feelings. And
also, Abed is the breakout character of the
Abed,
pilot, definitely.
Yes. Abed is a walking, talking version of TV tropes.
Yes. In the pilot, which is obviously very Breakfast Club inspired.
Yes.
He's constantly breaking out Breakfast Club references.
Yeah.
And it's nice that they address that, because it basically is the Breakfast Club. I mean, they don't hide that.
This is probably the geekiest sitcom on television at the moment.
Well, I don't know. The Big Bang Theory is still out.
The Big Bang Theory is a terrible, terrible show. They throw in the geek references almost as a kind of contractual obligation now. Whereas what's great about Community is that it actually throws its geek references into the episode. You know, it's not just a reference here and there. It is, they will structure the episode in a particular... I mean, the paintball episode we watched was obviously a very affectionate, effective parody of kind of all these post-apocalyptic...
And every action movie ever.
Pretty much. Yeah, and they do a paintball episode in the second season where it rips off Star Wars.
The thing I didn't like about the pilot is that some of the characters don't come out strongly at all. I mean, you've got Jeff Winger, you've got Chevy Chase Piers, and you've got
Abed.
And all the other characters kind of don't really...
I would say certainly the female characters on Community don't come out over particularly
well. The main girl, Britta, is utterly bland and uninteresting, although you kind of expect that from someone named after a water filter.
But shh,
now I'm on fire today.
Well, maybe you could use some Britta water to put it out.
Yay!
High five.
The other girl, Annie.
Annie's hot.
Yeah, she is.
That's what Annie does.
I get the impression that she kind of gets better as it goes. But she really doesn't have any function in the pilot.
I think that's fair. I mean, obviously, I've had 2.5 seasons to get to know these characters. And, yeah, I mean, there are obviously depths to a lot of them. I mean, Annie is very kind of neurotic. She's an overachiever. There's a lot to her character, and she does have kind of moments. But, yeah, I mean, I suppose that Jeff, Abed, and Pierce are the main voices in the group.
Yeah. And certainly in the pilot, the others don't really get a chance to show who they are.
So did you find that the paintball episode shed more light on the characters then?
Yes and no. I mean, it was very much a parody episode. And again, it was very Jeff and Britta.
Well, the thing is, a lot of Community's episodes are, in one sense or another, parody episodes. I mean, they all feature a lot of great character moments and move the plot along. But, they every week is a kind of a different... genre.
Well, I understand why you showed me Modern Warfare. That's the name of the episode, Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
I understand why you showed me that, because A, I love action movies.
Yep.
And B, it's very funny. But at the same time, it's almost not a good pairing, the pilot and the episode, because both are basically Jeff and Britta episodes.
I suppose so. I mean, Modern Warfare's obviously more of an ensemble piece.
Well, not really. I mean, they all get picked off one by one, and the main focus is that Jeff and Waterfilter finally get it on.
Let's stop calling her Waterfilter. It's just a bit creepy.
Fine. I guess there's been a will they won't they thing going on throughout the series, is that right?
A little bit, yeah. And to be fair, it continues after this. I mean, I don't think they ever really get it together properly.
Well, it's only, what, in series 3?
Yeah.
So, yeah. There's another 2 series left before they'll get it together. But all in all, Community, I will probably pick up the DVD when it comes out later.
Yeah,
this month.
I believe the DVD comes out on November 12th.
Yeah, and I will probably buy it because I didn't love what I saw, because I don't think you can love a sitcom based off one episode or 2 episodes. But I certainly liked what I saw, and I certainly appreciated the geekiness.
Cool. So the upshot of that is Duncan enjoyed Community. More new experiences next week. I believe it's my turn.
Yes, I need to decide what to make you do.
Yeah, Halloween was last week.
Every day with you is Halloween.
Orc Avengers, assemble!
Well, it's been a up and down issue. Tintin, disappointing. But Community, far from disappointing.
And some seriously dark on the forums.
Indeed, indeed. But there's still a bit of time left for next week's headlines.
Oh yes, the contrived joke section of the show.
Yes,
contrived. What do you got?
Well, guess what?
What?
It's contrived. This from next week's Telegraph. Marvel greenlights Excelsior, the Stan Lee story. Written by Stan Lee, starring Stan Lee, and with a cameo by Stan Lee. Stan Lee complains he's not in it enough.
Keep the faith, true believers. I've got here Ron Moore to pitch grim and gritty Animals of Farthing Wood remake.
What would that actually entail?
Lots of fox murder.
I can imagine that doing quite well in some parts of British countryside. Production of Bryan Singer's Battlestar Galactica remake stalls when the collective audience suddenly realises just how utterly insultingly cheap and shit that last ending was.
But you're not bitter.
No, I'm not. I'm not bitter about wasting 4 years of my life for a saggy, awful, dreadful cod philosopher. I didn't like it.
And finally, the makers of a new Colonel Gaddafi biopic caused controversy when they revealed that they've tweaked the ending so the former Libyan dictator regenerates into David Tennant. We've been the Dork Avengers. Goodbye.
Bye.
And so we come to the end of another pointless episode in the lives of our socially awkward duo. But remember, wherever they speak of geeks, wherever they've heard of nerds, you'll find... The Dork Avengers!